If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello. Welcome, everybody. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is Ruined, a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for you.
Well, we have a surprise for you. We are actually going to continue Found Footage Month.
Yes.
Because we thought, why stop doing them? Well, we love them so much.
We love them so much.
There's so many. We love all of your recommendations. We've really appreciated them. And luckily, had already been planning on doing many of the ones that had recommended. Love, Lake Mungo, The Taking of Deborah Logan. Yeah. Creep is coming out. We'll have just come out. We're recording this in the past,
yes.
So please forgive us.
We time
if
travel.
Anything bad has happened, we're sorry. We don't know about it yet.
We don't know.
if anything. Of course, something bad is going to happen. But yeah, we wanted to keep it going because it's our podcast, so we do what we want. And keep another thing we want is to reward you for leaving spooky yes. 5-star reviews.
Yes. And you guys have been leaving us such spooky ones. They're so scary. They're so funny. We have another great one this week. It was left by R.L. Stratton, and it is titled Mother.
Already scary.
It says, I love the show. Sadly, my mother did not. That's why she had to go. ... Oof, sure. The word economy and the spookiness level just in perfect calibration.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
Short and sour. Mm. Thank you so much for that. Incredible stuff.
Incredible.
Where'd she go? You know, that's my question. Go to get her own Spotify account. Listen to her own stuff.
I mean, best case scenario, that's where she's headed.
Allison, how are you doing?
Well, I do have a thing I want to talk about.
Yes.
So I have never been someone, the last time I played a game on my phone was like 9 years ago, Bejeweled. That was like the last,
okay.
Like I never got into any of the other games that people are playing on their phones. But when I was home with my parents for 2 weeks, I got so bored, I started downloading games on my phone again.
Okay,
and I download. I have one that I love, Two Dots. It's kind of just basically Bejeweled.
Great.
Are you aware of what is going on in the mobile game space?
You know, I think I have a hint of it only because I also don't play games on my phone. And actually, my sort of thing, my drug of choice is TikTok. And I have deleted it. I have not downloaded it since just because it takes so many hours out of my life. And instead, what I have chosen to do, because I was like, this at least it's something I can do on the toilet, but it like well is actively helping me, is I downloaded Duolingo and I'm teaching myself German.
Okay.
So, meine Brüder ist nett. My brother's nice. That's about where I've been able to go with it.
That's pretty good.
So I've never played games, but I'm interested. And the only reason I think I know what you're talking about is on Instagram, I'm starting to get ads for games. I was like, are these games?
What?
So what games are you being advertised?
They are so weird. There's like kind of a couple flavors, but the one I keep getting is it'll be like, this new mother and her baby are shivering to death in their
100%.
House. Do you want to fix the – what do you want to do to this scenario? Do you want to fix the window or do you want to use a flamethrower? And it's just like, what is happening?
And I was getting – like there were a couple weeks where I was getting a ton of them. I'm trying to think – I'm looking at my friend Chad on Instagram, hello aggressive allies to those of you who are listening. And it was just like every ad was for these games. And one of them was like a filthy woman with long scraggly hair. It's like clean her up for a date. But it's like, oh, you got to dress up, put makeup on, but you didn't shower.
Right.
So that's why, and I do appreciate, it seems like she's indiscriminately going out with men or women. So I'm like, okay, well, there's a little representation
There's inclusivity, but at the same, to what end?
Yeah, filthy, pathetic, bisexuals represented. But I don't know. And I don't know the names of these. I don't even really know how you play them.
Well,
you downloaded a whole app?
I obviously don't play them because I just keep seeing the ads. I have not downloaded Homescapes or whatever the fuck is happening. Or Manor Issues or whatever.
Yeah.
There's one with the word manor in it. But I've seen some chatter on Twitter about this. And somebody, I think they replied to a tweet of mine and they said, those ads aren't even what the game actually is. Like, those ads are meant to lure you in, and then the game is something entirely different, apparently. And I'm like, yeah, that is, like, right. Some jigsaw shit. Like,
also, like, how would that work? Because to me, it's like, okay, if I'm someone who's interested in this deranged concept or the artwork or whatever,
yes.
When I go there and it's, like, different art, I'm going to be like, oh, well, where's my weird little game about rescuing pregnant, abandoned women?
Yeah, or the man who's constantly trying to fix a toilet. Like, there's just...
I feel like...
They're so weird, and they really, like, I obviously they are not horror-related, but they certainly touch on things that are scary to me.
Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating. I will say on Duolingo, because I have the free version right now because I'm cheap, and I really enjoy the app, in case I was on the fence about getting it, it has ads for games. Like, most of their ads are for games.
Right, you're already on your
and
phone,
like,
so it's smart.
It's kind of wasted on me. You know, it's like, listen, if you're showing me ads for the thing about Pam on Peacock or whatever, then maybe I would be inclined to watch it. I'm never going to download, like, a first-person shooter. You know, it's just not going to happen for me.
Correct, same. I just want, like, really aesthetically pleasing kind of Tetris-style stuff.
Yeah, and that I understand. That's sort of a, you know, the new version of having a craft, I feel like.
There
so
was
watercolor.
One other game I played, but it was, I think it's in the spirit of Duolingo, which is, it was, and it had a name that was, like, it was obviously, like, translated from English into something else, back into English or whatever. But it was, like, World Map Game Headquarters. But it was, like, they would give you the outline of a country, and you would have to put it on a world map. And I'll tell you.
See, now that I'm on board with.
I'm a fucking idiot when it comes to geography.
A chill went up my spine just at the idea of it.
I was like, I don't know if I'm actually learning anything. Like, I am, but, like, I don't know. I don't know if I really walked away with a better understanding of, like, global geography, but I thought I would.
You know, and it's making me think the only game I've been interested in trying recently is that Hunt a Killer. Where, like, basically you subscribe to it, and then, like, once a month they send you clues to solve they have, like, seasons, so it's like you still have to solve a murder.
I like that.
And I keep getting ads for that, and that I actually would play.
That sounds...
Am I going to do the research to sign up for it? No, but if you, at home, if you play that, let us know if it's worth the time and money.
And if you, and if anybody has played the, like, bizarre games that we have referenced, we would love to hear from you.
Oh, yes. The name of it, I looked up, the name of it is Manor Matters.
Manor Matters.
Manor Matters.
That's what it
Again,
is.
No, nothing about it. So as we are continuing Found Footage Month, we are doing a sequel to another movie we did this month, but not the direct sequel, because there are four films in the franchise. We're doing the most recent one. Why? Because this is our podcast and we're allowed to do whatever we want.
Whatever we want. Numbers be damned.
And also, they're really only loosely connected. You know what I mean? They're connected thematically, but not necessarily, you know, sequentially. Fortunately, especially because this version is a prequel to the original, and that movie is, of course, 2021's VHS 94.
Yes.
The 94, of course, denotes that it takes place in 1994.
Yes.
So it's a prequel to the beginning of the first VHS, which, again, is allude to the story. I think one we see specifically is 1998.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And, you know, later, later than. So
got
these
it.
Are, this
got
is
it, got
a
it.
Prequel to the events of VHS, VHS 2, and VHS Viral, the third one, which we will do all of them, but not in order, because, again,
Where's the fun in that?
Exactly. Allison, we always like to have her watch the trailer. What are your thoughts about the trailer for VHS 94?
I will say there were a lot of disgusting sounds in it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, like, wet coughs and, like, wet breathing and, like, wet snapping and breaking of body parts. It is a wet-sounding trailer.
That's, you're dead on. And that really, I think, also does sum up many of the stories in the film.
It looks
very wet.
Much gorier than the original.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the first one, or the, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like it's both, like, higher, like, you can tell the budget's higher. And then certain certain stories, you don't really need the necessarily the effects. But some of them are very intricately made, and, like, clearly money went into making them look good.
Yes.
And part of that is making it gorier.
Yes. So very, very gory. I will say my frustration with the original VHS, I hope that we do not find... is this also an anthology? Is it, like, same...
Mm-hmm.
So...
Of course.
I am already anxious and annoyed at the idea that the underpinning story that takes us through all of this stuff will not have resolution, like, in the first
one. Allison, I think that is a fear is founded. And I'll be honest, I think, and this could have just been my not understanding, the foundational or the framing device in VHS 94 is one of the few horror stories I've consumed recently where I feel like I just didn't understand what was going on.
Oh, okay.
Which
good.
I feel like doesn't happen that often. And not that I didn't understand, or maybe I'm like, well, what about this? And like, well, what you introduce this element that you don't find out about it. And like, it seems like this is a different thing than what we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
So I'm excited to, at the end of this, have a segment where I ask you the questions. Mm-hmm. What did we just watch?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I'm trying to figure out how to frame, because we always like to have a baseline scary to have Allison weigh in. And I'm going to explain what I'm asking about, and then well, I'll ask the question, and then sort of give the framework of where I think about this. It's sort of, Allison, how scary do you find the concept of strangers making and sharing illegal VHS tapes?
Bad.
Real bad.
Real bad. That's real scary.
And the thing that comes to mind is, did you ever see that movie Zoo?
Yep.
Right, so which is about a, it's about a person who passed away, and that is very sad, yes. Regardless.
Right.
But it is about a farm in Washington State where men. Seem like for the most part.
Yeah, I don't think there were any women in it.
Right, but I'm sure if they had inquired, I can't imagine they wouldn't allow you to come, considering what they're doing. You could go there and have sex with horses. And so that's an insane thing to begin with. And the documentary is just about like, the people who were involved and like, you know, sort of how this happens and that kind of thing. But what's crazy is like the people are making DVDs of these men having sex with horses.
Yes.
And then like trading them around, like physical copies.
Yes.
Presumably because it's harder to trace. And I'm like, that is crazy. Like if it's one person doing it, that's already crazy.
Yes.
But if it's like a group of people, it's like, how do you meet each other? You have to like dedicate your life to being a part of this network. That's the only way I can understand seeing this.
Yes.
And that is so terrifying to me. Mm-hmm. That it's like, there are so many other things going on and that you could do with your life. And it's like, no, I'm going to commit my life to becoming part of in that case,
bestiality enthusiasts. And pornographers?
Yeah, making bestiality pornography and distributing it to fans thereof, because the person who died in the movie, his name was Mr. Hands. Mm-hmm. And it's like he had a moniker, and I'm sure his fans knew him by that moniker. Mm-hmm. I would argue maybe that's worse than anything in VHS, because this is real.
Right.
But there is that element of like, what happens if people with bad ideas about what should be filmed all get together and start trading it around?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like
it. I didn't think you would. Nope. At the end of the question, I'm like, I'm going to just go ahead and say, Allison doesn't care for this at all.
No, thank you.
And before we get into it, Allison, I'm going to do the same thing we did last time,
which is great.
I'm going to have you guess the twist of all of the different stories, starting with the framing device. So let us get into it. We are going to ruin VHS 94. We open on a tape being put into where else? The TV. And it's, of course, like a very creepy handheld image of a young woman with long, dark hair watching like a huge stack of different TVs playing horrible news footage from around the world. And she sniffs a handful of white goo. And we see the vapor enter her nose and then the white goo sort of falls out of her hand.
Like
and the
glue?
Next thing we see, glue. It looks like glue.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like glue. And the next thing we see is that same woman, her eyes are bleeding and appear to be gouged out.
Cool.
And she's wearing all white and kind of a black necktie. And there's another person in all white walking behind her. And the woman whose eyes have been gouged out is counting down from 10, which is a pretty big accomplishment when your eyes have been gouged out.
To be able to still be verbal feels
really
intense.
And so that is the video we see. And we are now catching up with a SWAT team that is descending on a warehouse. And the things that we ascertain from their conversation is what we've just seen is the video that the police obtained or somebody sent to authorities implicating this woman and what has been done to her as a part of like a cult. So a cult that has gained control of this particular drug, which I'm assuming is the goo.
Okay, got it.
And so they are raiding this warehouse, and the SWAT team, their names are Slater, Orsler, Sprayberry, which that was a fun name, Spivey, Petro, and Nash. And Petro and Nash are both women. And their cameraman, Gary. And Gary looks like a normal person they've hired to come along with them, which I don't think that's how it works. I've never worked on a SWAT team.
I'm almost
positive.
But
I imagine it's a member of the SWAT team or police that is trained to shoot these kinds of things.
Yeah, I don't think that it's just like, you don't troll Craigslist for, like, a director to like right, shoot
yeah, it'll
stuff.
Be like all Gary's welcome.
Yes.
So they are raiding this warehouse, and we see them arrive, and they cut the lock on a chain link fence, and they all run in looking for this shipment of what they believe to be will be drugs. Mm-hmm. Allison, what do you think the twist will be in the framing device, which is called Holy Hell?
Guess the twist.
Maybe that's not a drug. That, like, that's like a misdirect, and like there's something else, like I'm trying to articulate what I want. I think they're going to find lots of shipments of white clothing instead of drugs.
Oh, okay. I love it.
But I don't know how to account for the rest of that plot.
Right, because there's a lot coming at you right up top.
Yeah.
So we see them, getting ready, and Slater tells them this has to go great because Petro fucked up the last bust. So they they have to get in there. They have to, again, is this what happens when you're on a SWAT team? It's like, we have to do it right this time. Oh, probably, actually, now that I'm saying it. And they all discuss what the drug is, and it's the white goop, which I take as like, oh, it's some sort of a new insane drug. I don't know if you saw the new Batman.
I did not.
But everyone does drops. So everyone is like doing a drug that's like putting drops in your eyes. So I think this is just supposed to be like new crazy drug. So the SWAT team swarms the warehouse surrounding the compound, and Petro, one of the female SWAT members, tells Gary to follow her and record everything. So they bust in, and immediately they find two private jets. And so you're like, okay, so this isn't just some rinky-dink operation. This is like a cartel. This is like an international situation, or at least interstate. Mm-hmm. And as they approach the planes, we hear a woman's voice announcing, "All are welcome. All are watching."
Mm-mm. "Tonight is the night you've been waiting for. Track my signal. The signal is the stimulant. The signal is the sedative. The signal is salvation."
Okay.
Which the only way I could understand this at this point was, I'm like, oh, it's kind of a Videodrome, a Brian Oblivion.
Yes.
You know, like, this isn't simply people are doing illegal things. This is a cult. They have there's a reason. There's a signal that's going to be sent out through a certain medium, a certain kind of way to watch something.
Okay. Okay.
As they go through the warehouse, they're looking for drugs. They're looking for, like, oh, the people who are in charge of this. Mm-hmm. Instead, they keep finding all of these cells. And each have their own, like, blaring TV and a dead person inside.
Okay.
And I wrote to myself, the drug is ushering in salvation, which sure looks like inhaling drugs and then dying in front of a television set. You know, the ultimate salvation we're all looking for.
Yes, absolutely.
They find a guy with his eyes gouged out, and one of the SWAT members is like, oh my God, I know that guy. He owns the video store on my block, because it's 1994, of course. Mm-hmm. And Allison sure looks like he tore out his own eyeballs, because his eyeballs are just sitting neatly next to him.
Okay.
They cannot find the drug, and they can't find anyone alive. And also, at this point, I realized in my notes that I have dubbed the drug Super Goop, because I didn't know what to call it.
Super Goop.
And instead of Super Goop, they keep finding dead people watching VHS tapes. Like, in one room, there's like a dozen dead people with sunglasses on. There's rock music playing. And Slater shuts off the music. He's like, oh, we can't fuck this up. We gotta find out. We gotta get Super Goop, you know? And Petro's screaming at him, like, this is my crime scene. This is my raid. I'm in charge here. You know, a dick measuring contest in the worst possible situation.
Yes.
So they continue on through the warehouse, but we linger on a TV screen, which plays a news broadcast from the 90s. And we know it's from the 90s because they talk about this brand new thing, the internet.
Oh, good. Great.
Allison, the name of this segment is Storm Drain. Okay. And I'll just tell you the first thing that we find out, we're talking about having two news reporters, and they say, new reports are in about locals coming forward about a mysterious figure they're calling the Rat Man.
Nope.
Allison, would you like to guess the twist in Storm Drain?
Guess the twist.
I mean, I'm going to guess that there is a man who lives in the sewer.
Okay. Yes. We got that so far.
Yep. Pretty clear. I'm going to guess it's he's eating the rats. Bronx style.
Okay. I'm going to push you even further. Okay. Why would he be doing that? Why would somebody want to do this?
I feel like it's going to have to do with the internet now. Maybe the internet is driving him. He learned on the internet. He's doing it for the internet.
That would be like if TikTok existed in this time. It'd be like, oh, he's in the sewer eating rats, but it's just because he needs views.
Yeah, it's a brand.
It's a kind of prank. So the reporters tell us eyewitnesses say a man rat hybrid, which was a pretty big distinction if you're an eyewitness, if you ask me, has been spotted emerging from the sewer at night. But if you shine a light directly on it, it disappears. It hates light. Again, good to know.
Okay.
And they interviewing all these locals, and this guy's like at a skate park, and he's like, I think he's an escaped mental patient. Like, it's like her cousin. He went out. I think it's just some guy living in the sewer. And they interview a pastor, and the pastor's like, I think it's a sign from Jesus. I think rat man's going to purge all the sinners and the elite and drive out sin from America. It's like, well, why? Don't put that on rat man.
Why is that his responsibility?
He's busy being a rat man. Give him a break.
He's rat man.
Another person, a gun nut, tells reporter Holly and her cameraman Jeff, he's like, I spotted the rat man emerging from that giant storm drain right near the river. Mm-hmm. And Holly, who's like already put together, you know, she's got the anchor hair.
Yes.
You know, she calls her producer and they're like, hey, Holly, can you and Jeff go ahead and go into the storm drain and just check out if there's a rat man? And Holly's like, No. I'm trying to be an anchor here. I don't want to be, like, we don't know what's down there. We certainly shouldn't be, it's not safe to go in a storm.
No, you can, two random people who are not, like, professionals in city sewage, I guess, like, can't just go into a storm drain.
Exactly, especially if there is apparently eyewitness sightings of a man rat hybrid.
It's not
going to be following that thing around.
You should have followed a man into a storm drain.
But you can, Allison, if you want to get the scoop. Oh, you got to get the scoop.
Ugh, journalism.
And Jeff is immediately like, you can tell Jeff sucks because he's like joking about Holly and him getting a drink. And they kind of establish that Holly is an alcoholic. And cool. He's like, we should get a drink later. And she's like, shut up, Jeff. And I'm like, you guys are going to be killed by a rat man. But yeah, banter all you want.
Yeah.
So they go to walk inside, they're at the entrance of the storm drain, but they sort of see the gun nut still watching them and has this big gun. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, well, I'll agree. We could duck inside the storm drain, but I don't want to go any further. Of course, as soon as they start recording, they hear a loud sound behind Holly, mm-hmm. and deep in the tunnel, Jeff spots someone watching them. Allison, Jeff walks back into the storm drain, which is tall enough to walk in. Like, they're both standing up.
Yeah.
Sort of
they're not, like, crawling into through. The river. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a cement tunnel, mm-hmm. you know, big enough to stand up with Holly trailing behind them. And Holly's like, I don't think this is a great idea. And they find like a bunch, it looks like someone's sleeping under a sleeping bag. When they pull the sleeping bag back, it's just a bunch of like, you know, someone's belongings, including a stuffed rabbit. And mm-hmm. Holly's like, oh my God, do kids live down here? Like, we're the richest people in the world and we're the richest nation in the world and we treat people like this.
Yes.
And now Holly's like, you know what, we should record this, not because there's a fucking rat man, but like to show that homeless people have to live in the fucking storm drain and we should be able to feel horrible about ourselves and figure out what to do. And Jeff says, I don't know, Holly, don't you have an AA meeting to go to? It's like, Jeff, I can't wait for a rat man to eat your ass.
I hope rat man eviscerates Jeff.
100%. And Holly says, you know, fuck you. Like, we could really help people. And Jeff's like, I helped you get a Pulitzer. And I'm like, oh, rat man, beep, beep, 555 rat man. I've got a bitch you could eat. So now, like, Jeff, I'm sorry. You've never seen a horror movie.
Bitch you can eat.
So now Jeff is the reluctant one. And now that he does know people are down there, and Holly's like, no, we're going to go interview people and we're going to find out what's going on here. And they keep getting further and further away from the entrance, obviously. And they hit a bend. And we see a guy sort of standing in the darkness, and he then retreats down the pipe. But his tent's there and his sleeping bag and all this stuff. And Jeff is like, I don't think we should touch his stuff. But Holly says, just get a shot of it. We just want to see this is how people are living. And Jeff shoots inside the tent. And suddenly, amidst the blankets and trash bags, an eye opens. And Jeff freaks out and drops the camera. And someone, like, darts past them and into down the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So they press on until they find the guy who ran the tent. And he's completely covered in grime, like a full coat of grime.
Yes.
And Holly asks him, well, what's your name? And the guy says, Bill. And Holly says, I mean, do other people live down here with you? And Bill says, Rat Ma. And Holly says, did you say Rat Man, Bill? Are you the Rat Man? Do people call you that? Is that sort of, are you, you know, I mean, they think like, oh, are people just misidentifying a homeless person?
Right.
And Bill looks at her, smiles, and then all this black ooze just falls out of his smiling mouth.
No.
And to their credit, both Holly and Jeff are like, well, you know, Holly's like, here's my card. We should be going, but feel free to contact me. I'd love to talk somewhere outside the drain.
Yeah.
Just then a low, gigantic growl echoes down the tunnel. And Holly and Jeff break into a run, try to run to the entrance, only for Jeff to whip around and realize Holly is gone. And we hear her scream down in the tunnel. She's been got.
No.
Jeff, panicking, he tries to run, and he slams into a different tunnel person who grabs him, and the camera gets shut off. When the camera turns back on, Holly and Jeff are both tied up together, and they're surrounded by the tunnel people. And she's saying, like, we are here to help you. We could tell your story. And their leader steps forward, and it is the pastor from the beginning who said Ratman's going to purge all the sinners.
Ugh.
And the pastor says, that's a nice offer, but we're going to tell our own story. Just then, from down another tunnel, we hear a roar, and the pastor lures from its opening a disgusting human-sized rat monster.
Nope.
It looks like a man crawling, but then it has a giant, like, rat-shaped head and, like, a huge jaw.
No.
But then the human face is on the front of the snout, like, where the nose would be. It's like a human skull with eyes, and it looks like a human mouth at the end.
Oh, no. People are like, that's Rat Man? I mean, I guess, but, like, there are so many other ways to describe that that would be more accurate.
Well, Allison, we're about to find out what the creature's real name is, which Bill said earlier, but the creature vomits out a liquid, and the pastor collects the liquid in a bowl and holds it over Jeff and says, in the name of Ratma. His name is Ratma.
Ratma.
And Allison, he takes the liquid, which again, Ratma has just vomited out, and he pours it on Jeff's face, and it burns him like acid.
What is happening?
I don't know. And the pastor tells Holly, you know, we're going to usher in a new era. Your friend wasn't worth saving, but maybe you'll be saved. It's up to our new God now. And they drag Holly so she is face to screaming, liquid spewing face with Ratma.
No.
And Ratma's like, and Holly's like, why, God, why? And video cuts out, and we cut to a commercial of the Veggie Masher, which is a very funny parody of like the Slap Chop, where it's just like something that just mashes your food.
It's in the trailer. And they're like, it makes it a delicious paste.
And so we finally get back to the news, and it's about Holly's rescue from the storm drain.
No, I, like, don't want her to still be alive after that.
Unfortunately, well, you're correct. Unfortunately, cameraman Jeff is still missing. And he turns, and not only has Holly survived, she's there in the co-anchor spot. And she says, thanks a lot, Mark. And she launches into a story about Westerville's 94th annual pumpkin festival. However, as she starts talking, she starts devolving. And she says,
people are already lining up to Ratma the Hayrides, Apple Ratma, and of course, to see who will be crowned the festival's largest Ratma.
And, you know, she stops talking and suddenly starts drooling that black ooze out of her mouth.
Oh, good.
Her co-anchor Mark says, oh, let's go to commercial. Allison, Holly turns to Mark and projectile vomits the black ooze onto his face, which immediately starts fucking melting off. Like, he basically tears off his own face away from his skull as he screams.
Yes.
Chaos in the studio. We hear him running and screaming. And Holly recovers enough to wrap up the show and says, Ohio State plays the Indiana Hoosiers tomorrow night. Good luck to our Buckeyes. I'm Holly Marciano, Channel 6 News. Hail Ratma. And, which I loved.
Hail Ratma.
Hail Ratma.
So is she Ratma now? Is she the god?
I think that she, much like Ratma's followers, has sort of been indoctrinated into the cult of Ratma.
Mm-hmm, the cult
now,
of
my
Ratma.
Question is Ratma intentionally doing this? Ratma doesn't seem like it has much of a plan. It almost seems like just a creature they found.
Right. Well, what came first? Like, did this creature exist and, like, a cult formed around it? Or, like, was the creature once a human and thus, like, spawned the cult in its own existence? Like,
this is a great questions. Where it's almost like I want it to be like, this is the drain where there's runoff from a nuclear power plant or something.
Yeah, great.
And not that you have to have an explanation, but something like that would be nice.
Yeah, so I like having all those, you know, T's crossed and I's dotted.
Yes, exactly. The T in Ratma. Yeah, I think she's now a follower of Ratma. I think Ratma creates a chemical change in you and you become its follower.
Yeah, I guess because, like, the question is, like, oh, this, like, black bile, like, kills people. But, like, how can she – how? Why isn't she dead if it's inside of her?
I think the implication is that if she's, something like, if Rama chooses you, yes. if you're, like, pure of heart or whatever, you will be – you will survive. Because Jeff didn't. But
Jeff was kind of an asshole.
Yeah. And essentially the other tunnel people have, like, Bill, right. we have to assume Bill, he yeah. survived.
Yeah.
And it just turns you into a drooling follower of Rama, I guess.
Well, that's – what isn't that all religion?
We find ourselves back in the warehouse with this, which the SWAT team has identified as a super lab. And I'm like, okay, you know, where they're making this drug. And Slater is mocking Nash and he's like, oh, you feel like you're in over your head. And it's like, anyone would be in over their head. This is like an insane
yes.
drug cult TV upset. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is not normal stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, of course, they go down into the basement and they find a giant room full of pews of mannequins watching a giant screen. And, of course, a pile of human eyeballs. And Spivey says, let's call for backup. And Nash says, no, no, not yet. Let's reconvene with the others. And we hear them talking back and forth on the walkie-talkies. And Slater says, me and Osler got separated, so stay there and we'll come back to you. And on the giant screen behind them plays our next video, The Empty Wake.
Oh, God.
So here's the tagline. A funeral home worker is left to tend to a wake in the evening during a terrible storm, and no one attends. And while she's there, alone, in the middle of this storm, lights flickering, she hears a knock from inside the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
Allison, would you like to guess the twist?
Guess the twist.
That person's not dead. Or I'm going to say electrical storm created a zombie.
Love it. Absolutely great. Yeah, Frankenstein, you know.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I guess that's... I'm like, I guess that is true. It's not true. It's still fiction. A novel happen. Written by a lady.
My favorite nonfiction story, Frankenstein.
My favorite documentary, Frankenstein.
So we open on Haley. She's a funeral home worker. And she gets the rundown from her boss, Ronald. And he says the family of the dead man, they're a little bit strange, but they had a request. Basically, the wake is this evening. The name of the deceased is Andrew Edwards. And his family asked, could you record the wake? So, and it was just like, we don't normally record the wake, but they want it for their memorial video. So basically he's like, me and Tim are going to head home. You're going to stay here and man the wake. Really, the only thing you have to worry about is changing the VHS tapes like every hour or whatever. And they just want footage of people coming and paying their last respects. And Haley's like, yeah, that's fine. You know, they're being paid extra.
Mm-hmm.
So she just has to stay until the end of the wake, which is in the later evening hours. And Haley's weirded out by this, but it's sort of like, well, that's my job, and, like, I do this all the time, yeah. So it is what it is. And the coworker Tim comes in, and he's like, well, why is the casket crooked? And they look, and Ronald's like, I probably bumped it. And then he goes to move it. Of course, the casket weighs, like, hundreds of pounds.
Right, yeah.
You couldn't just bump it accidentally.
No.
And Tim tells us, you know, that the corpse was in a horrible accident. And Tim says he could only do so much with the head and the face. So that's why it's a closed casket funeral.
Yep.
Ronald and Tim leave for the night. The wake starts at 9, which is no, I don't know whose wake starts at 9.
No.
Nobody I know.
Nope.
You know, maybe you're doing 5 or after work, but not, it starts at 9.
It starts at 9? No, I don't even want to go to like a party that starts at 9, let alone a funeral.
You know, no. So Haley's there. She's manning the camcorder. She's got like the little, your little leaflets to hand out. Nobody comes to the wake. And at a certain point, Haley calls Ronald, like, freaking out, like, there's nobody here. Like, did something happen? Like, do we post the wrong times? Like,
right.
I'm
it's not very one
odd.
Person.
Yeah.
Feels
And
odd.
Ronald's like, you know what it probably is there's a terrible storm raging outside, and probably people just couldn't make it through the storm. So, you know, just stay there. It's better for you to stay there. We could hear the lightning. The lights are flickering. So you stay there, you know, make sure that you're safe. But if people don't show up, again, it's probably because they got caught in this horrible rainstorm mm-hmm. and they decided it wasn't worth it. Luckily, the electricity is still working, so Haley's able to call her friend Sharon. And I like that because it's 1994, we have to set up, like, Sharon, they have to call on a landline. Nobody has a cell phone. So the landline is, if the power goes out, there is no landline. And she leaves Sharon a voice message and says, you know, I'm just here. I'm settling in for a long night of being terrified at the funeral home. So just give me a call back.
Yeah.
Allison, as soon as she hangs up with Sharon, from inside the coffin, Haley hears a knock and then another. Of course, she freaks out, but luckily the phone rings and it's her friend Sharon. And Haley says, could you check the last couple of weeks of obituaries to look for this person's name, Andrew Edwards? Ooh. And she says specifically, I know your mom saves the newspaper. It's like, of course, because you'd only be able to look this up if you went to the library. The library's closed. Yes. It's the middle of the goddamn night.
Yes. So good solve by the writers here.
Yes. They thought it through. So despite the fact that she has heard two knocks from inside the coffin, Haley has decided, I'm going to keep the ship. I'm going to man the ship. I'm going to keep going. She diligently switches out the tapes. The lights are flickering. At a certain point, the lights just straight up go out. So she has to fumble around in the dark in a funeral home.
Nope, I'd be out the door.
Absolutely.
No job is worth it.
I'm in my car.
Yeah.
I will sit in my car.
I will sit in my car.
Yeah. Or I will lock myself in the office, whatever.
Yeah.
So she finds a candle holder. And by the time she gets back to the sort of viewing area, she lights all the candles and the lights come back on. So she blows out the candles. Girl, don't do it. Leave the candles
lit. You can't trust it.
Allison, when she turns back to the coffin, it's crooked again. And she knocks. She's a braver person than I. She goes and she knocks on the coffin. No reply. And she attempts to sort of adjust it again, but it's incredibly heavy.
Right.
And suddenly the coffin knocks back. And she screams and sort of falls over the chairs. Mm-hmm. And she calls Ronald in a panic. And Ronald's like, wow, you can't handle one horrifying night alone in a funeral home? Like, who did I hire? And then he hands the phone to Tim.
Okay.
And I was like, are Ronald and Tim a couple? Because they don't imply that. It made it seem like, we just work at a funeral home. But it's like, talk to Tim. And it's like, it's 10 at night during a storm.
Yeah, you're together, but not right, at work.
Have you finished making love? Are you about to make love? Yes. Is that why you're so mad? It's like, you're interrupting our romantic night.
Our lovemaking. Yes.
If I was her, I'd be like, Sharon, I've got some gossip about my boss and my coworker, Tim. Like, they are together in the storm. And Tim says, you know, the knocking is from the gases releasing from the body. I've heard this, you know, like, this is a very familiar thing. It's very scary, but it's totally normal. It's not dangerous. And listen, I understand you're freaked out. You're there alone, and you're hearing these sounds. And Tim says, which I think is reasonable, he says, you know, Ronnie, so he calls him Ronnie, so they're in love.
Oh,
Ronnie and
for
I will stay on the line. Go open the lid and look inside, because you will feel better. You'll see it's just a regular corpse like we always deal with.
Nope.
And, you know, Haley goes, it's like, no, it's fine.
I'm good.
I'm being crazy. I'm just crazy. So she hangs up, but then she goes and she raps on the coffin and she hears a sound, but it's from the front door. The first attendee has arrived. Haley welcomes Gustav.
Nope.
Who of course, is like, nobody's here. Name. And Gustav's like, well, of course nobody's here. There's a tornado watch. And I'm like, poor Haley's here. Fucking,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, first of all, there's a corpse coming to life, but also there's going to be a tornado. She should be in the basement or I don't even, wherever.
Yeah.
Which is the morgue. Again, more reason to be terrified.
Yeah. I'd go home. I'd be like, I'll just find a new job.
Also, like, Allison, I'm going to ask you, what happens when the morgue gets hit by a tornado? It's not going to be a pretty sight.
Mm-mm. Okay, bodies.
Especially if you're inside
everywhere.
Of it. So Haley sort of retreats to the back to switch out a tape, and Gustav prays in the front row, and he prays in Hungarian, according to Wikipedia.
Great.
And he holds his hands out to Andrew's coffin. And after just a minute of being there, Gustav goes to leave, and Haley's like, oh, do you anything else? And he said, no, I paid my respects in full. So the night goes on, and Haley jumps when she hears a sound, but it's just Sharon calling back. She went through her mother's newspapers.
Oh, good.
And Sharon says, you know, I didn't have to look at the obituaries. Andrew's death was front page news. He was the guy who left off the church down in Haysburg. He went up to the roof of the church. He's shouting gibberish for an hour. And right when the cops are trying to get him down, he jumped in front of all the families that were coming into service. Allison, the power goes out.
No.
The phone dies because it's a landline.
Of course.
And the coffin starts rocking and rolling. He's playing the drums.
Girl,
he's doing a drum solo on the inside of that coffin.
Get the fuck out of there.
Allison, because Haley isn't a total moron, she runs to the front door only to find out it's been chained shut.
By Gustav?
Ostensibly by Gustav.
Wow. Gustav, what a dick.
I mean, I guess that's why he had to come. He's like, oh, there's a tornado watch. Why do I have to go chain this woman into a funeral home with a body that's coming alive? So when she returns to the funeral parlor, the tornado sirens start blaring. It is pitch dark.
No. No.
And the only light she has is the light on the camcorder. Allison, the coffin has been overturned. Mm-mm. And it is empty. Mm-mm. And she turns and sees Andrew Edwards standing against the wall. And the top of his head is completely crushed, like been mm-hmm. ripped off.
Yeah.
Haley, because she doesn't know she's in a horror movie, she's assuming that he is alive and badly injured. And then he was just like,
no.
They were incorrectly labeling him as dead. And she's like, Mr. Edwards, you were in a horrible accident. They must have made a mistake at the morgue. You were safe. I'm going to help you. He, of course, whips around, snarling, his tongue out. And we see that, so like, it's basically the top of his head was sheared off in the fall.
Of course.
So he does, and so his little top of his head that has been fallen off when he got off out of the coffin.
Great.
So he lunges at her. His intestines are falling out.
Yeah.
The sutures of his stomach are opening.
Yeah, great.
Haley realizes, oh, because the top of his head is over there.
He's not alive.
He cannot see her.
Oh, okay.
Oh, also, he's not alive, absolutely.
I mean...
But more importantly, he can't see her. But he can hear her, so she screams, and he's chasing her blindly around the funeral parlor. And finally, she hides, you know, and she distracts his body. She uses a remote for the camera to, like, set off the camera noise. Mm. And he's running over the camera. Mm-hmm. Allison, unfortunately, didn't realize it, but now she's right near the top of his skull, and his eyes snap open.
Nope.
So now the body can see her. The body lunges at her. Allison, just as the body lunges at Haley, a tornado explodes through the building, sending everything flying.
Wow.
And in the final shot from the overturned camera, we see Haley, who is now possessed with Andrew's spirit, stagger out of essentially the broken window. And how do we know that she's been possessed by Andrew's spirit? Because before she goes, she sort of feels her body and grabs her breasts as if like, I'm in a woman's body now. Okay. And then staggers out of the building.
Wow.
You look on your face.
I'm not pleased.
Dismay.
I'm not pleased. I'll tell you. Oh, boy.
Back in the super group lab, the SWAT team finds dozens of stuffed animals and a room full of bloody dismembered bodies. And their thing, and I'm assuming this is like a reference to Heaven's Gate, is that when they first got there, they're thinking, oh, these are cult members who killed themselves.
Right.
But these are like arms, legs, like that's like this is clearly not self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Something horrible's happened.
Yeah, if you've been dismembered, like that's not usually something you've done.
Exactly. And the SWAT team's radio, like their walkie-talkies, have stopped working. So they are all kind of lost to one another. But there's sort of a movement from Slater, like, fuck this, we have to get out, we have to find an exit. Mm-hmm. And as they're running around, they run down the hallway and we hear the woman's voice talk about the signal being a salvation echoing. And we zoom in on a TV screen and we find ourselves in the next film.
Wonderful.
And this one is called The Subject. And this is the most like high, like budget.
Okay.
Most like, I really like this one. So basically we find ourselves and you immediately know where we are. We are in a mad scientist lab. And we are in the lab of Dr. James Suhendra, and we open on a man's head connected to mechanical spider legs. Like, he's waking up, and he's realizing that he's a half-machine monster.
Great.
And he screams, and he's being, you know, sort of tortured, and he has to be put out via fire extinguisher by Dr. James Suhendra. And he's working out of a lab in Indonesia, and he's your classic... You know, I want to play God. I want to merge machine and man. I want to, you know, create a new form of humanity. You know, those things that mad scientists do. Mm-hmm. And he records. He's always recording to himself and recording at the camera as well. And he says, subject 97 did not survive having mechanical legs attached to just his head. Who would have guessed?
Wow.
And he says, this doctor says to himself, just another failure. I'm always failing, but he's not going to let that break him down, Allison.
Well, perseverance is an important quality in a mad scientist.
So in the next edition of his video diary, he has two new patients, 98 and 99.
Okay.
And 98 is a young man tied upright to a slab. Mm-hmm. And 99 is a woman essentially tied to a wheelchair. And they're both anesthetized.
Okay.
As we watch, he takes a drill and he saws off the top of 99's skull and he takes out her brain.
Okay.
And as he does, 98, the young man, wakes up and he realizes, one, I'm being restrained to this table. Two, I'm in a mad scientist lab. Mm-hmm. And three, a young woman just had her brain removed. Dr. Suhendra just injects him with a sedative. It's another day at the office to him. The next image we see is from the camera recording from 99, who wakes up from her surgery. And Dr. Suhendra is laughing and he's looking at her. And her vision is, it looks like a camcorder. So there's like a battery. It says live.
Okay.
And he's like, she's alive. She's his Frankenstein. She's like, she's okay. Alive. You know, basically just happy the experiment didn't immediately kill her, which is a huge success to him. Look, like, she's been alive for 5 minutes.
It's
like
all
this.
About progress and making incremental improvements. So good for him.
And he shows her on a TV, like, that her eyes have a video feed. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a neo-human. You're a miracle. Again, very Videodrome. Like,
yes.
Taking humans to the next. I've shown that I can merge metal and flesh. Like, I am a genius, you know? And he's recording notes like, yeah. These fools. Whatever you're saying, these fools, yeah, you know that you're a bad scientist.
You've truly lost it. Also, like, if he could have just held out and served and lived into, you know, the 20-teens, he could have just watched Westworld.
Absolutely. I think, but then he would have gotten some ideas from that too.
Well,
you
yeah,
like,
course.
I need to make Westworld. I need to create all these people. It's like, these fools can't appreciate what I was trying to do, but I did it. And he reassures 99, you know, everything's going to be fine. But of course, she looks down. Not only is she restrained to a hospital bed, but one of her hands has been removed.
No.
So she's screaming, and even her scream was sort of like digital sounding, mm-hmm. like mechanical screaming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we have yet to see what she looks like in full, because we're seeing it from her perspective.
Right, yeah, so we're gonna, yeah, got it.
So sometime later, 99 is watching Dr. Suhendra surgically modify 98, so the young man.
Okay, he's still in play.
Cutting off his arms. Yeah, he's still there, he's still alive. Cutting off his arms and throwing them into a bin, which again seems like a huge waste. Mm-hmm. And then we see him basically sever the top of his head from his body and put it to the side. Again, I think that would kill you, but...
Yes, I think that once that happens, it's over. But I'm not a mad scientist, so maybe I'm wrong.
And so he compares himself to Da Vinci, and he talks about, like, the Vitruvian Man, which is sort of like drawing of Da Vinci, where it's like a guy with multiple arms and multiple legs. And it's sort of like the concept of the ideal human, which is like, that's already so problematic, we understand now.
Obviously.
But unfortunately... The good doctor's idea is that it's that, except you're also like a crazy robot at the same time.
Mm-hmm, obviously.
And his implication is like, you know, who's to say whether Da Vinci was doing what I'm doing? I think maybe we both had the same aims. It's like, again, no, I'm probably not.
No.
Da Vinci had other stuff going on. When we turn back, he has finished the surgery on 98. And 98 lifts his arm, and it's a tremendous blade, like a gigantic machete
man.
Blade.
Not blade
huge.
Arms.
And because he likes to have the news on while he works, 99 is able to hear a report on the news, which tells us these strings of disappearances bring further conflict between the police and the people. Tensions rose when locals found mutilated body parts in the canals of Jakarta. The police believe that the suspect is Dr. James Suhendra, genius pioneer in bioengineering mechanics. So people know it's him, much in sort of a Frankenstein type of way.
Yes.
They're like, huh, let's see. A bunch of young, fit people are disappearing and a bunch of hastily chopped off limbs are showing up. It's pretty sure it's that doctor we all know that does this kind of shit.
Yeah.
And they say the last disappearance was a young woman with the initials S.A. And 99 realizes that's her.
Okay.
And so she's crying in this very, like, digital, mechanical way until Dr. Suhendra just, like, unplugs her.
Okay.
When she wakes up again, the doctor is taking a drill to her head.
Nope.
Basically sort of like, you know, if you're going to be crying and carrying on and, like, still having a personality.
Going to have to fix
like,
that.
Like, I'm not going to deal with this,
right.
You know. And she's able to escape her restraints because she's, like, now, like, a cyborg. Only to be knocked unconscious by the doctor. Just then, there's a pounding on the door. It's the police. They finally found his secret, disgusting hideout.
Good.
And Dr.
Finally, police doing something right.
I know, exactly. Good for them.
I mean...
Dr. Suhendra, like, hasn't thought about this, so he just throws a sheet over 99. I was like, that's the plan when the cops are up? You throw a sheet over
them?
I was
like, unplug her again.
Also, like, even if they're not within eyesight, you have an insane lab, like, covered in, like, schematics of how to make a human, like, cyborg. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, man? It's just not going to work.
So the police bust through the door, and Dr. Sanders like, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, you're accusing me. Like, this is insane. And he says to them, so are you going to arrest me? And the commander says, oh, no, we're not going to arrest you. And his men just open fire on him, killing
Whoa.
Him.
Whoa. That's and like, we don't know how that works.
I know. Well, you know, hey, but, yeah, you got to get things done when you're up against a mad scientist. And the only officer who's like, well, what are we doing? Like, we have to bring him in and put him on trial is Jono, who is a young man who has the camera operator. And the commander's like, you got to grow a pair of balls, son. Like, war, you know, science. And then they all turn and Subject 99 has gotten to her feet and they all gasp in horror. And Jono tries not to throw up. And she like looks at them and commander says, oh, my God, this poor girl. And Jono said, look at its head. We still haven't seen it. So now by this point, head. I'm dying to see what she looks
right.
like.
Right. Well, clearly she's no longer even really an easily identified like woman because like something has gotten yes. horribly. Yeah.
And Jono says, I think she needs help. And the commander says, she doesn't have a soul anymore. I can't bring her back to her parents like this. Like, she's a creature. She's not a human. Yeah. And he gets a gun and he's going to kill her despite the fact that she is like wailing and like obviously alive.
Yes.
And Jono says, that's not our decision to make. Like, that's not fair. Just then, the lights go out. Mm-hmm. And when they come on, Subject 99 is sort of like skittered away. And Jono captured where she's going. But he's like, I don't see her. She must have escaped. So he's already trying to like help her escape.
Give her some, yeah.
Allison, the cops realize that the lights are off and the doors have automatically locked. And when they get them open, a booby trap explodes. Mm-hmm. It was, of course, set by Dr. Suhendro for this exact moment that he knew would happen.
Yeah, he knew this was coming.
Yeah. He's got a lot of time on his hands because he's devoted his life to being insane.
Yes.
A recording starts to play and Dr. Suhendro says, if you're hearing this, the lab has been breached and I am dead. If you try to take my creations from the lab, you will die here. The police are like, there's got to be another exit. And they fan out throughout the lab. Instead of an exit, they find 98, the male patient, mm-hmm. who stands up and he has two swords for arms. No. And then, like, the top of his head's like a robot head with two red lights that look sort of reminiscent of a Jar Jar Binks, sort of like a robot head and then two sort of eyes mm-hmm. on stalks.
Yeah.
And he starts just killing everybody, just cutting everyone in half, like just going absolutely nuts.
Cool.
The commander pulls the pin on a grenade and throws it. And there's a huge explosion. And Subject 99 is obviously horrified mm-hmm. and is able to escape into the hallway.
Okay.
But she's running. And in front of her are some of the police. They've emerged in the hallway. And behind her is 98. And she's able to duck into a hallway. And those two factions battle. But she can hear behind her that they're looking for her.
Okay.
So she has made her way. She realizes she's in Dr. Sahendra's office, which is much less crazy. Like, it just looks like a doctor's office.
Right.
You're making your notes about how you made, like, a crazy machine person.
Yes.
And she finds a tank with the top of Subject 98's head in it.
Oh, good.
And worst of all, Allison, she finds a mirror. And she finally sees herself. And one of her arms has been severed. And then sort of like a port is put on it, like a... mm-hmm. attachment, like mm-hmm. like a mixer, sort of.
Sure, yes.
Like maybe different things can be plugged into
it. Got it.
And then basically her head, so she has a lower jaw, and then from her upper jaw onward is just a camera. And so, of course, she freaks out. She punches the mirror. She's like screaming and crying. And then she hears a little girl's voice say, hello, who's there? And she follows the voice down the hall, and she discovers in this horrible room where like all the rejects things were kept. It's just a head with mechanical, like, squid arms.
No.
Saying, hello, who's there? So she runs out, freaked out, and finds two other altered bodies, and it's unclear if they're alive. And then on the surgery table, there is a woman who is still alive mid-surgery. Her leg's been severed, and her torso is filled with mechanical objects and wires.
No.
And the woman cries and says, is this a dream? And Subject 99 goes over and just unplugs her. Letting her die.
I believe that.
Which is what I would want.
Yes.
You die painlessly. Yeah. I don't have to go fight.
I don't want to learn more about what's going on. I don't want to see what's happening to me. Just like end it.
Yeah. So she gave that woman what she could not have, which is a peaceful death. Because suddenly there's a police officer behind her and he screams, die, you monster. And he tries to shoot her. And desperately searching the lab for a weapon, 99 finds a machine gun, which she mounts into the port of her arm. So now she has a machine gun arm.
Great.
And she's just fighting her way out of the lab. She's shooting the police. There's like new rounds of police showing up. And she's just spraying them with bullets until she runs out. Luckily, she also has grenades in it.
Good.
She uses all of her grenades to the point that she has to fight a cop hand to hand and pulls a pipe off the wall and jams it through the side of his face. And finally, she's down to the last cop, and it's Jono. And she's about to kill him. He says, please don't. I know who you are. You're that girl who was kidnapped. And he still thinks, oh, you're like a fighting machine. Like, Dr. Surhinder made you all murderers. Like, what do you want? And she tells him in a robot voice to live. And he says, me too. Then let's live. And he starts leading her through the exit. It's like, Jono came through.
Aww.
They're gonna escape.
Well,
unfortunately.
I don't feel good about it.
I know. They run into the commander, who is somehow still alive.
Okay.
And he sort of throws Jono aside. And he's like, that thing killed your friends. That gunned down my our compatriots. And because she's out of bullets and grenades, he's able to overpower 99, and he starts ripping the cords out of her head. And he's, like, covered in blood, and he's laughing maniacally, only for Jono to step up and shoot him, killing the commander in Jono's defense.
Wow.
And showing 99 the ultimate, you know, act of
sacrifice.
Empathy.
Yes.
And 99 reaches for him just as 98 shows up and just stabs Jono with his giant blade.
Oh.
Summoning all of her new monster strength, 99 attacks 98 and rips his robot head apart and then tears his human brain out, killing him, before collapsing next to Jono, and they die together. Mm. Or do they?
Well.
Because we see the security camera taken from the building, and we see in the morning 99 walking out into the morning sunlight to do what?
I guess
I don't
go
know.
On a killing spree. She's not going to be like, now I'm going to go to grad school, you know?
Right. It's like you go home. Like, I don't know if you can hang out. Like, what are your options at this point?
You also just, like, killed a bunch of cops. Like, I just got to believe there's, like, some kind of, you know, search for you going on.
Back at the super goop lab, Gary, the cameraman, says to Nash, I thought you said no one would get hurt. And Nash tells him, oh, Gary, someone always gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Forever starts right now. It would seem that the SWAT team itself has been infiltrated by people who were a part of this cult, specifically Nash.
Okay.
However, they're not revealing that to the other members, so they're all continuing to look, quote-unquote, looking for Spivey and Osler, who've gone missing, okay. And they can't find the other people. So it's down to Nash, Gary, the camera person, Petro, and Slater. And Slater's like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. I don't care about anyone else. Unfortunately, they have to walk past a huge bank of TV screens. Well, and he looks at one and he falls to his knees, hypnotized by it. Which brings us to our final film, okay. Terror.
Oh, great.
And here's the log line. I'm gonna say white supremacist.
Got it.
Militia has plans to bomb a federal building.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that plan, they have to shoot the same guy in the head every day. Allison, can you guess the twist to Terror?
Guess the twist.
Wait, like there's just like a corpse that they keep shooting or the same guy keeps living?
He's not a corpse. A guy every day, the same guy gets up and he's alive.
Oh.
And in order to enact their plan, they have to shoot this same guy in the head every single day.
I guess those people end up at January 6th.
Oh, they'd be thrilled.
Right up their alley.
They'd be so excited.
I mean, I gotta believe that you mentioned it's a white supremacy militia for a reason. I feel like that's...
No, it's just the 90s. I think it's supposed to be like Waco,
like
any of these.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be white supremacists, but it's sort of like, oh, patriotism. We're gonna cleanse the mongrel horde.
Sure.
Black cancer sweeping over America.
Yeah.
I'm not saying every militia is white supremacist. I'm saying the default in America is white supremacist.
Correct.
And Christian. It goes without saying.
Yeah, of course. Extreme Christianity. I guess that the guy is their leader.
Okay.
And that's as far as I think I can get.
That's fine.
With this information.
Listen, this is a lot. It's a lot to ask for so many twists, and I think... You have a good one.
Okay.
We're at the headquarters, the Michigan headquarters of the First Patriots Movement, who have kidnapped, and they're holding a man hostage. And he's sobbing. He's sort of like in like what looks like a horse, like stable, okay, inside the bunker. And we meet our militia members, some of them, Greg, who's the head of it. They all call him Air Commandant because it wouldn't be a white Christian militia without a nod to Nazism.
Of course.
And Greg, Chuck, and Bob is our cameraman. And they surround the man, and Greg says to them, "Happy shall be that taketh and dashes the little ones against the stone." And they shoot the hostage point blank in the head, killing him.
Okay.
So Greg sort of, as our leader, sort of presents us with the group's manifesto, you know, America is plagued with a black cancer that is allowed to rot this once great land from within for far too long.
We, the last decent men of America, are the true patriots who have given blood oath to defend our way of life.
You know, militia stuff. We've all heard
cool,
it before.
Cool, cool, cool. Super chill. Yeah.
We're going to quash the mongrel horde. Right. We're going to bring about a cleansing across the land. Sure. You know, all the men are like excited and they shoot into the air. It's also a snowy, it's like freezing out. So they're all outside in the snow shooting their weapons. And Greg tells them, and we've been given this gift, this weapon that Christ himself was seen fit to give us. And meaning the man who they've just shot in the head.
Okay.
The gang goes and they survey the building, the federal building they're obviously planning to target. And Bob's like, I don't know, we can get the beast inside, but they aren't open until after sunrise. So, like, I don't know how we're going to get him in. And he also says they have a daycare in there, which no one reacts to, but is obviously a nod to the Oklahoma City bombings.
Got it.
And they all decide that the maintenance entrance is the best way to go. Clearly, they're going to bomb this building. You find out later it's a federal building.
Of course.
Allison, they go back to the van and the being held in, like, the horse stall. And he's totally healed. He looks totally fine. And they shoot him in the head again.
Okay.
So ahead of the attack, someone stops by with, like, all of these weapons. And it's Slater from the SWAT team.
Okay.
And he's arming them. So Slater is watching a video of himself, something that he did in the past.
Oh.
And he's giving them all of this, like, military-type weaponry that somebody says, oh, it's from, like, Desert Storm, you know. And Greg says, okay, but, like, did any of the other officers see you take this stuff? And Slater says, we've got friends everywhere, especially now that the Clintons are in the office. A lot of cops are ready for patriots like you to take the feds down.
Okay.
Obviously, the parallels to the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. This is sort of the 90s version, which we also had plenty of militias in the 90s, yep, unfortunately. And Bob, behind the camera, sort of, he's, like, art directing. So he's always, like, Air Commandant, you want to make a statement? And Greg's like, cut. And then he, like, has them all stand behind him dramatically. He's, like, their charismatic leader.
Okay.
And, like, gives this speech, you know, like, to make it, like, more impressive. And Bob asks, like, are we sure that this will work? Like, have you tested it? And Greg's like, that's so crazy because I actually just thought we should test it. So they go back into the man they have hostage. And you guessed it, he's fine again. And they shoot him in the head again.
Okay.
And they run in and they siphon the man's blood into a bucket.
Okay.
Allison, to test their theory of what they're going to do, they take a rabbit, and it's the cutest rabbit. It's so white and fluffy. Mm-hmm. And they inject it with the man's blood. And it's dawn, and they're outside. And Greg says, we should experiment. And they put the rabbit in a cage and yells, run! And all the other men run as the sun comes up. But nothing happens. And Greg, he's like, Jimmy, the damn tree's probably blocking the sunlight. When the first rays of sunlight fall on the rabbit explodes.
What?
And not simply just explodes in the cage. It's gigantic, like it was like a bomb goes off. Cut to them shooting the guy in the head again. He's alive, and they shoot him in the head again and drain his blood out again.
Okay.
That they're getting ready. They have sort of the mechanism. They're going to keep the person, this man, who they keep calling a creature, inside this crate. But they can't figure out how to get the crate to drop open inside the federal building.
Okay.
And Greg's like, we're going to push our plan back a day, and I will not let Christ the King down. Because this is exactly the kind of thing that Christ loves. I'm just going on record.
Yeah.
Loves when you use some sort of man, supernatural man, to blow up things and hurt people. That's what he talked about in the Bible. That's his favorite thing in the world. We can all agree on that. But they're all really getting excited. Like, it's finally happening. And to celebrate the new coming dawn for America, they all get wasted. And they're just, like, peeing outside, and they're, like, fencing in the snow, and they're just, like, firing guns in the air, like, woo! And Jimmy goads Bob the cameraman, but he's like, I don't really drink, I don't like drinking, and he goes Bobby to drinking, and Bob wasted goes to visit Steve in the security room, and he's like, let's go fuck with them. And he's like, fuck with the guy we shoot every day in the head. Like, I'm not going to go
his
in there.
His life already is like, bad.
And Bob's like, come on, you don't want to piss on him. It's like, that's a you thing, Bob. Like, that's not everybody. But of course, Bob's like, you're a pussy. Like, you wouldn't go in there. And so Steve is like riled up and they both go into the enclosure.
Okay.
And Bob, so the man who's been shot in the head is still, he's dead. He looks dead. Correct. He has a huge wound. He is not regenerated like he does every day.
Okay.
And Bob goads Steve into kissing the man.
Kissing?
Who is still, he's dead. And when he holds up the body, the blood from the head wound dumps down Steve's throat and coats him. And also Steve falls into the blood in like a, like sitcom level pratfall.
Okay, great.
Like he topples to the ground. In the morning, an alarm rings and everyone realizes they all passed out. No one was standing guard. And they find a body. One of the militiamen has had his throat torn out.
Okay.
And we realize, oh no, the guy we've been shooting in the head every day is out. He's loose. And from inside the main enclosure, we hear Steve scream and then a severed head rolls out the door. And one of the guys panics and he starts firing into the building, hitting multiple militiamen. And he only stops when someone else shoots him in the head, which is like an insane sequence.
Yeah.
But finally, Steve, who I thought that was his head, but somebody else said, I guess Bob's still filming. Steve staggers out the door and someone screams, Steve, no, you're covered in vampire blood. The guy's a vampire.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Allison.
Oh, and that the sunlight Steve, makes sense now.
Yeah. It
makes sense.
So he steps into the sunlight. Steve fucking explodes like a gas station going up. And not only exploding, but spraying his blood on everyone else, killing everyone except for Greg, the leader, Jimmy, Tom, and Bob, the cameraman.
Okay.
They decide it's daylight, which means the vampire cannot leave the building. But we have to go in and try to kill it now.
Yeah.
Because once it's nighttime, it can leave, and it's unstoppable.
Yes.
So they go into the—
Night is when he thrives.
Exactly. Nighttime is the right time. So they're going through the building, through the bunker, and they hear the man in the sort of the hayloft of the barn. Uh-huh. So it's the attic, but it's like gigantic. And Tom ascends the ladder. The vampire emerges, but instead of like a regular man like he's been looking like, he has this insane, like it looks like a trifold, like a squid mouth or a what are those things called?
Nothing good.
Like a Venus flytrap, but with three parts to it.
Okay.
And it's filled with all these gigantic teeth, and it grabs Tom's face and it rips it off him. So it's not a conventional vampire by any means.
Yeah, a little different, a little different flavor.
And Greg fires up into the attic and says, inexplicably, I think we got him, which is like, what are you talking about? So they all clamber up in the attic, and the man grabs Jimmy's head and slams it into the ground, killing him.
Okay.
And Bob manages to shoot Greg in the leg in the melee before Bob, too, is attacked. And the vampire eats his face off, too. And he drops the video camera. And the last thing we see is Greg, the last man standing. He sobs and he prays over and again, Christ is king, Christ is king. While the vampire locks him into the hayloft. And in an interesting moment of self-reflection, the vampire then opens the window, detonating himself like a bomb, killing himself, but also killing Greg and destroying the compound.
Mm.
Which brings us to the final part of our framing device.
Okay.
Statler, who we just saw in this little video, giving arms to this militia, wakes up tied to a chair, still in the Supergoop warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Petro and Nash tell him, we saw that last videotape. And as he watches, they undress out of their SWAT uniforms, revealing underneath their all-white cult outfits. So they have been a part of a cult the whole time.
Okay.
And Nash tells Statler, this is all part of a far-out fetish film cult of bootleggers. We send people to untouched, untouchable, disgusting, illegal films, snuff films, animal stuff, contraband content. But I didn't think we'd get busted by our own useless unit. So they have been part of the SWAT team and also doing this dirty business on the side.
Right.
But it was not their intention. They didn't lead them there intentionally. And Nash takes down her hair, and we realize, I think, that she is the girl from the beginning whose video they received, which I guess I took to mean that they did send the video themselves, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
And then Petro beats Statler to death with the video camera to the point that it gets stuck in his skull.
Oh.
And Petro and Nash conclude our film, and they say, this video is going to be our best one yet. What should we call it? Now I have some questions for you, Allison, about what you think happened.
I also have some questions, so.
Well, my first question is, well, so what about the super goop?
Well, yeah, that was my first question. It's like, where, what happened to that? Like, are they just going to leave that? I mean, not are they. This is a completed film. Like, they're just leaving that unexplained, like.
Yeah, because I was like, okay. I thought at the end it's like, oh, the drug was like a false flag. Yeah, or, you know, like, or like the drug just helps people enjoy it. Like, it's like, oh, that's the red herring. You think it's this drug.
But it's actually just watching those videos is like maybe enjoyable when you are on the drug.
Yeah, something like that where it's like, this is part of it. Yeah. But then to not bring it up at all at the end, I thought was really confusing.
They really took after the original with this.
Again, I could have missed something, I'll be honest.
They really took after the original with this move and of not tying up all these loose ends in the framing device.
I also thought, like, it's sort of like, so it's a cult. But then when they explain it, it's almost like when you first walk in and you see the planes, it's like, oh my God, this is like a doomsday cult and it's like international. Right. And they're using drugs to get people to watch these. But then at the end, it's like, we just make these fetish films. It's like, it's kind of a de-escalation of what we thought at the beginning.
Yeah, it's not a satisfying ending.
But you know what? This is an anthology film. It's not really about being satisfied in any way.
It's just about seeing a bunch of stuff.
A little taste.
But again, like, I would have liked it to be a bit more like sewn up at the end. Like, just be like, look, you showed us stuff earlier. Just mention it again.
Right, just have it be like, oh, like the drugs are a red herring, or like, yeah, like have him do the super goop and be like, now he's obsessed with the films too, or something.
Just bring it back.
And then also, because this is a pre, and they don't really say this, but what I assumed was, so this is a prequel to the first one. I was like, oh, so maybe they're the people who made the films that those guys were looking for. Like, they're the original group or conglomerate that is distributing these.
So all those videos that are in the old man, that house or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then it's like, I don't know if that's true. I think I just told myself that to make myself feel like it was connected.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess, but like the concept of so many of these being found footage, like they don't make these videos, but I guess they distribute them.
Yes. And also, yeah, it's like so many of these are so much higher stakes now. I feel like it's like the original, it's like, oh, a spooky ghost or like a weird guy, you know, or a demon. It's like, that's hard to prove. But then it's like, these people have planes. Like, this is like a warehouse full of dead bodies.
Yeah.
Like, you clearly have a movement and you have money to do it. And that, to me, is different. A different level of commitment that you'd think 5 years later, I don't know, it's almost like they would have taken over the world. But
you would think.
That's not really what they're going for.
Yeah, I guess
they're more interested in just pervert films
and
stuff.
Yeah, being fucking weirdos.
And you know, like we said about Zoob, that is some people's priorities. So, totally. You know, maybe they're like, we do what we do and we enjoy what we enjoy. And I don't really know why everyone pulled their eyes out, but I get it. If I had seen any of the stuff and thought it was real, I suppose I would too.
Yep. I get that. That tracks more for me than not mentioning the drugs again.
And then my question, Allison, what are some fatal mistakes that you may have noticed in the film?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, look, it's a common refrain, but like, you know, the girl in the funeral home, it's like, just leave. Like, you should have left before Gustav even chained those doors. Like, you should have left when no one was coming and you were hearing a knock and the lights were going out because a tornado was coming and your bosses are home fucking. Like, get out of there.
But I did appreciate they at least address, like, when she does go, at least they try to address, like, okay, she can't leave now.
Yes.
So, again, do you think there'd have to be a fire exit or something, or, like, a window,
something,
you know,
right.
Like.
Something.
But I guess then immediately afterwards, that's when she finds out that the corpse is up and about. So maybe you're right. If she had tried to leave earlier, that would have been, maybe that's the takeaway from this is leave earlier.
Leave earlier.
Don't be a part of a militia.
Yeah, don't be a part of a militia. I would say the mad scientist one, like, there's nothing, like, you can do.
There's nothing they could have done. Yeah.
Like,
be nice to murderous cyborgs, I guess.
But, like, he did that and still died.
Yeah.
So.
Boy.
A lot of mistakes.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
A lot of mistakes.
Oh, and I think, here we go, never go into a storm drain.
Oh.
Unless you work for the city or you're a plumber. Or there's some reason that you're being sent into the storm drain, that's fine. Yeah. But if you're just a regular person, don't go there because Ratma's down there.
Ratma's down there.
And you will have to worship Ratma for till the end of your days.
Yeah.
And then finally, where would you put VHS 94 on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I will say this was super scary and disgusting. So I think a 7.5.
Mm-hmm. I feel like because of the nature of the higher end, like it's like I was not scared by the subject, the mad scientist one, but I really appreciated it.
Yes.
But to me, it wasn't scary. It's just more of a, it's sort of action-y.
Yeah, you know? It kind of takes you out of the like found footage vibe a little bit when it's like so high quality and like so outrageous.
Yeah.
So,
but I still really enjoyed it. So I'm going to say 5. So like thoroughly enjoyed it. Absolutely would recommend. I love an anthology, you know, and we're excited to do more in the future too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not as scary when it's higher production.
Right.
That because the griminess, the grittiness of the original VHS and of a lot of found footage that we've talked about, like the realism is what makes it appealing.
Yes.
And once you have cyborgs, it was very cool and I liked it, but
you don't have that vibe anymore. And that's really what found footage feels all about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, we hope you enjoy that we're continuing this month.
Yes.
Please keep sending us your recommendation.
So many
we have some great ones you sent us. And eventually we will do all the VHS movies, of course. And if you were not able to go to our live show, you could still, it is available for 72 hours. So if you're listening to this on Tuesday, you still have time to listen to the live show if you want to buy a ticket, which, of course, you can get at momenthouse.com/ruined.
Yes.
And, we'll see you next week.
And
until
then, we got to ask.
Please.
Keep it spooky.
And while you're at it, hail Ratma.
Hail Ratma. Avoid the Noid.
Hail the Noid.
Hail the Noid. Avoid Ratma.
If the Noid had come out of that tunnel... I think the Noid might be Ratma. He is kind of a rodent.
Never
man.
Seen them in the same room.
You got me there.
In the same storm drain. Okay, bye.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.